Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with experts in breast, genitourinary, gastrointestinal, and lung cancers about the platinum chemotherapy shortage in the United States. A survey conducted by the National Comprehensive Cancer Network Best Practices Committee between May 21, 2023 and May 31, 2023, polled 27 NCCN member institutions about their experience with the shortage. 93% of these centers reported a shortage of carboplatin, and 70% of these centers indicated a lack of cisplatin. In our exclusive interview, the following experts in a variety of solid tumor types emphasized issues brought on by the chemotherapy shortage and proposed potential solutions for ending this shortage and preventing similar ones from occurring in the future. Seth Wander, MD, PhD, is a medical oncologist at Massachusetts General Hospital, as well as an instructor in medicine at Harvard Medical School, both in Boston. Paolo Tarantino, MD, is a researcher at the European Institute of Oncology in Milan, Italy, as well as a clinical research fellow at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston. Daniel P. Petrelak, MD, is a professor of medicine, medical oncology, and urology at Yale School of Medicine, as well as chief of genitourinary oncology at Yale Cancer Center in New Haven, Connecticut. Lionel A. Kankou-Fankwa, MD, is a medical oncologist in the Department of Medical Oncology at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Solange Peters, MD, PhD, is a full professor and chair of medical oncology and the thoracic malignancies program in the Department of Oncology at the University Hospital of Lausanne in Switzerland. Edgardo Santos, MD, FACP, FCCP, is a clinical affiliate associate professor at the Charles E. Schmidt College of Medicine at Florida Atlantic University, as well as the treasurer for the Florida Society of Clinical Oncology.
It is absolutely, in many ways, I think, a crisis, right, across many different tumor types. You know, the platinum agents are widely used across many different cancers, both in the early stage setting and in the metastatic setting. And for example, in breast cancer, we use a lot of carboplatin, for example, in the early stage setting for HER2 positive or triple negative disease that requires preoperative chemotherapy. And I think this is a challenge across the entire country. And it's something that, you know, every oncologist and every patient is forced to grapple with on a day-to-day basis. Obviously, we want to rely on the community at large, as well as our, you know, partners in government to work together to try to find a solution to this as quickly and safely as possible, so patients don't need to worry about being able to access what would be standard critically important drugs to help them treat their cancer. You know, what we're trying to do and what every cancer center is trying to do is to be thoughtful about making sure that we are, you know, deploying these drugs in situations where they are absolutely critical, right, and cannot be safely replaced with any other alternatives, trying to make sure we are prioritizing, you know, our ability to give the standard, you know, therapy to patients who need it. And I think some of the ways, you know, you do that is obviously working on a oncologist by oncologist and case by case basis to think about what standard therapeutic options are to try to be sure that you're not utilizing the drug in a place where another drug may be just as effective or where there may be other totally reasonable, safe options to give. This is an evolving process and the availability of the drug is going to sort of come up and down. And I'm hoping that we don't enter a place where we have to make even more difficult decisions, right, about where these drugs are being deployed. And it's obviously a challenge for leadership at many of these hospitals to think about how to develop policies that safely distribute these drugs in the most effective way we can.
I would say that we've been lucky because we've been able to treat most of our patients that needed to be treated with carboplatin. At the same time, that there were issues we had to prioritize the use in certain settings. And I would say in recent years, carboplatin has become more and more important, in particular in the curative setting, due to its inclusion in the Keynote regimen that we use for most of our patients with stage 2 and stage 3 triple negative disease. But also in the metastatic setting, we commonly use carboplatin for triple negative disease. And in general, it's very disrupting to see these shortages there is some prediction that they could affect also other type of common chemotherapies. And I think this just highlights how certain drugs, even if they may be old, they may be cheap drugs, actually their impact is huge on patient quality of life, on patient curability, and in general, in the way we treat our patients. And so we definitely need to discuss and to figure out ways to avoid this in the future and to have the possibility to treat our patients with drugs that, although they may be old and cheap, they can really have a major impact in the way we treat our patients with breast cancer. Of course, we disclose the fact that there is an issue related to the potential shortage of drugs, in this case, carboplatin. And I have to say, in general, once again, we've been lucky. So most of the patients that needed platinum could receive it. But of course, in the case they could not receive it, it's important to point out the strategies that are in place in order to replace it. And so, for instance, we've been going back to utilizing cisplatin. That is a trickier agent to utilize because it requires a lot more hydration, a lot more time for the patient in the clinic, and it can have also more side effect than carboplatin in certain instances. And the patient needs to know why the patient is receiving cisplatin instead of carboplatin, or why is receiving a totally different regimen, a platinum-free regimen. And in general, the trickiest situation is triple negative breast cancer, because really the regimen that has been validated in triple negative breast cancer in the neoadjuvant setting includes platinum. And the Brightness trial has suggested that platinum is a really important part of the treatment regimen for this population. At the same time, there are also studies that have avoided the use of platinum. And so in some cases, we do think about avoiding its use, especially if the patient is frail, if we believe we can avoid carboplatin and just utilizing anthracycline and taxanes. But in general, it is tricky and it is important to discuss this with the patients in order to have a clear discussion and for them to be informed about what is going on and what are the choices we're putting in place in order to minimize the impact of carboplatin shortage.
We have to make it more feasible for these drugs to be produced here. This way, we're not reliant upon a source outside of this country for our drugs. And certainly, we have to investigate the reasons why these drugs can't be produced here. Either it's not financially feasible, or there are some other reasons as well. So we need to explore that carefully and then see how we can do this, not only for cancer drugs, but this is also my understanding for antibiotics as well. We've explained it by saying that there are alternatives for treatment. The germ cell tumor patients, I mean, that's simply, it's a no issue. They have to get cisplatinum. For a patient who's ineligible to receive cisplatinum and eligible to receive carboplatin, one could go forth with the alternative FDA-approved combination of enfortumab and pembrolizumab, which has a different side effect pattern, but nonetheless has significant efficacy in this population of patients. So there are alternatives, and the alternatives need to be discussed, and we need to just simply emphasize to the patients that we are taking the best possible care of them at this particular time, given the circumstances. These drugs have a shelf life. These drugs do expire after a period of time. So there's only so much you can do in terms of stockpiling these drugs. Again, I think that the issue really is it should be produced in the United States, and we should have our own supply. We need to understand why this has not been feasible for generic pharmaceutical companies or for the larger pharmaceutical companies to produce these drugs in this country. You know, these drugs are off patent, and certainly that may not be as profitable, but still they're necessary. And how can we go about making this a situation where these drugs are produced here?
The platinum shortage, I mean, that's an ongoing problem, and we are trying to find ways to circumvent that. We have to be creative, in oncology, different cancer types using platinums in different regimen. I think cisplatin has been the first one to be unavailable. We found ways to use other platinum agents, although the efficacy was not necessarily tested in some of these regimens, but they were good alternatives, oxaliplatin and carboplatin. I think so far, a lot of institutions that still have the ability to use either oxaliplatin or carboplatin, but it seems as institutions that even those are running out. So we really hope that we'll have the supply soon before we completely run out, because otherwise we'll be running out of creativity. It does seem like, the shortage, is more prevalent in the community, out in the community. So a lot of the reserve all the supply right now for patients who are able to get it, it's mainly academic centers. So I think the community sites were the first to run out. The data will have to be generated. We'll look at it closely. But from my impression, talking to colleagues, talking to patients, patients are in these underserved communities, rural communities, you know, where the first to run out and have to travel longer distances to the nearest academic center, relocate, sometimes change their oncologists, relocate to a different practice to be able to continue their care uninterrupted. So I think it seems like there has been an impact, the disparities. We don't have data yet to even establish that. But I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if later this year or early next year, when we look at the data closely, we'll see that it negatively impacted a lot of these minorities and probably disproportionately.
It's interesting because it's one of the first shortages that I've been seeing in the U.S. only. Usually shortages are kind of transversal, global. I remember we had a top of us at some point, the bleomycin and so on, but this carboplatin shortage that you have is not affecting Europe at all, which is quite interesting. So we have been writing a lot and working a lot on that at the European Society for Medical Oncology, how to prevent shortages. Shortages always affect these drugs which are not rentable to produce, meaning that the production is reduced to the minimal chain of production, minimal amount of investment for the companies producing to reduce the cost, and no redundant way to potentially replace would it be the production of the very initial substance or just the production of the final drug. So usually it's very limited and considered as being a minimal investment for the pharmaceutical industry producing, meaning that at the end, if anything goes wrong, the drug is not available anymore. So there are many points that can be put in place politically to avoid shortages, forcing the redundancy of a system producing cheap drugs, forcing it, making it mandatory. So they have not been adopted, but we have been writing a lot and asking too about how to work on shortages and dictate somehow the mechanism which should be in place in order to avoid these terrible situations. In the US, it's interesting because it really changes the whole way you treat patients, right? More IO-IO combinations because you don't have platinum. Just, I like the IO-IO story, but not because you're forced to use it, just because you think it's the best way to treat your patients. So I think this is even irrational that in our very wealthy countries, you don't have the very basic drugs. So this is really a policy. A set of rules that have to be fixed because you have been living the worst. And now, we met the ASCO leadership at the ASCO meeting, and we have to probably write and settle a working group and a policy working group trying to force the movement toward this kind of political commitments, right? Because this is ridiculous. And this is it's just unacceptable for patients.
The shortage issue of not having cisplatin and carboplatin, in which there are some diseases that those medications can be curative, has been very impactful. Now that things are getting a little bit better with the help of the supplier in collaboration with the regulatory entities, and that is subsiding, but it was very bad because we have to do some adjustment and sometimes make tough decisions, and sometimes the patient couldn't receive the therapy, or we have to delay the therapy because we didn't have that. It was very, very, very bad. But I think that the things are getting better. What we need to do, in my opinion, is to have legislation that prevent that things to continue happening, because there are so many medication that they are already generics, they have lost their patent, and they are very effective. We cannot allow this kind of pattern or vicious circle to continue. We need to stop that and be sure that the chain of supply do not stop, because that affect, I would say, thousands of patients, not only here in the United States, but also around the world.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Onc Live On Air.